It's a dangerous question, considering what's about to happen next week. But I will say it's nothing earth-shattering, just a present. I nod as we look at each other. You should maybe put some more thought into it. I think she deserves that much. You like her, Rick says. I get it. I'm not going to interfere, Smith. If she makes you happy, I'm happy to step aside. I don't know if Quinn will. He's having fun with her, as far as I can tell. You might have misjudged him when you assigned him as number two. Yeah, maybe. But he's still in love with Rochelle, don't you think? Brick shrugs. He hasn't talked about her all week to me. You? Same, I reluctantly admit. Does Chella want to continue this arrangement? Brick asks. I think so. And I do think that. If she didn't want to experience all four of us together, she'd have seen everything I did last night for what it was. A declaration. But she missed it. She missed all of it. Maybe it was just the shock of her father's message, or maybe she doesn't feel the same way about me. Doesn't matter in the end, because she just missed it. Well, Brick says, if you want my opinion, I think she's got a problem, Smith. What kind of problem? Maybe problem is the wrong word, he amends. Maybe she's just very curious, or very horny. Or maybe she's just into the gangbang thing. I don't know her well enough to figure that out yet. But she's into it. You feel it, right? She likes this stuff. I mean, she went along on Wednesday night. We double-teamed her, and she was ready for more last night. If her father hadn't shown up, we'd have done it again. He's right. She wants this. She's known it was the objective since we started. And she's still here, playing the game with us, allowing herself to be a pawn on the chessboard. She needs it, Smith. For whatever reason, she needs it. So give it to her. Let her think about it. And then, if you still like her enough to back out of this arrangement, do it. I won't stand in your way. I let out a breath of air. I know that, Brick. I wasn't thinking you would. I'm just being clear with you. We've been friends for a long time, and I've never seen you so interested in one of the girls. Take her if you want her. But do it after she gets what she needs, or she might regret it for the rest of her life. And you don't want to start something new with regrets. I finish my drink and stand up. Yeah, I say. I'll do that. We can finish this game and then decide after. I'm gonna take off, man. Have fun this weekend. Later, Brick calls out. But I'm already hopping down the stairs and heading towards the revolving doors. I've got an idea for a Christmas present. Something she probably needs but won't ever ask for. Something she didn't get nearly enough of growing up.
Chapter 30. Chella. Hey, I call out when I get home from work. You here? Smith peeks out from behind the wall of the kitchen. What's up? Nothing, I say, hanging up my coat in the closet, and then hopping up the stairs to the main living level. I walk into the kitchen and find him cooking. What are you doing? Christmas Eve Eve dinner, Marcella. It was a tradition in my adoptive house. I say, pulling out one of the bar stools and taking a seat. What do you cook for a Christmas Eve Eve dinner? Traditional Baldwin etiquette says a whole bunch of pretentious bullshit only a chef can make, like crown roast or leg of lamb. That sounds good, I say. I'm starving. Chella, Smith says, shooting me a sidelong look as he slips his hands into pot holders. I'm Smith. I made mac and cheese. I laugh. That sounds good, too. He opens the oven and takes out a casserole dish, gingerly setting it down on a trivet to protect my countertops. You do realize that what you're doing right now is lady porn? Smith smiles, but doesn't look at me. Cooking? He asks. And vacuuming. If you really want to turn me on, you'd vacuum the whole house. And dust. Bonus points for using lemon-scented wood polish. You're funny, Marcella Walcott. Okay, I say, tucking down my smile. So what's all this about? Since when do you cook? And hey, did you clean up your mess on the dining room table? He glares at me. Your fucking father showing up got me all paranoid that someone else will come over unexpectedly. Like who? I don't know. Your friends, maybe? I don't do friends, Cella. I don't do fathers, either. But I had no choice. I lean over the island and grab a breadstick from a basket. I'm sorry you had to see all that, and I'm sorry I was moody last night. You were really perfect, Smith, and I appreciate it. So, you're over it? He asks, then dips a fork in his mac and cheese and takes a bite. It's good, he says, putting the fork down and going to the cupboard for plates. I didn't think you'd be so calm about it tonight, to be honest. Is that why you're cooking? To make me feel better? He walks over to the small kitchenette table next to the living room and sets the plates down. Maybe a little, I guess, but mostly because I got it out of Quinn that your family never celebrated Christmas. He stops to shoot me a pretend glare. I owe him something big for that secret. I hope you know that. Then why didn't you just let it go? I ask, chewing on my breadstick. Is this homemade? Smith glares at me again, and I can't stop the chuckle that escapes. I mean, he continues his thought, even I had a Christmas every year, and since Quinn beat me to a tree, I figured I'd go for food. He comes back into the kitchen and grabs the silverware and some white linen napkins, folded into the envelope design, like at the club. Did you bring fancy napkins from the club? You don't have any, he says, like this explains everything. How could a woman with your breeding not have linen napkins? How can I possibly write you a Christmas Eve message on a paper towel? Oh, shit. He's really trying to make me happy tonight. A message on a napkin. I take a moment to think about his other messages so far. The first one had his number on it. Don't worry, I'll take care of you, it said. And the poem on the second one. The one about going into the dark without a light. What else do people do on Christmas Eve? I ask. Not much. My big plans are for tomorrow. We have a party to go to, Cella. Oh, now your name is Brick. Not that kind of party, he says, shooting me a sidelong look. The fun kind, at the club. I say, thinking that over. Saturday night at the club sounds dangerous. I'm not telling you anything else. It's a surprise. And Brick and Quinn know about this? They do, he says. And they're okay with me being there for a Saturday night party? He winks at me. You're a fun girl, Marcella. Why wouldn't they be okay with it? I say again. Now you've got me curious. What kind of fun times are we talking about? No clues, he says. It's a surprise. He grabs a bottle of champagne from the counter and pops the cork, then fills two glasses. He hands me one and raises his, seemingly at a loss for words. What should we toast to? I ask to break the silence. He's just staring at me with a look I can't describe. Thoughtful? Confused? I'm not sure. To us, he says. We should toast to us. You know, this relationship I have with you is coming dangerously close to dating. Aren't we dating? He asks. Are we dating? My eyebrows shoot up my forehead. We're living together. Are we? We both laugh. I guess it's a little confusing, isn't it? I shrug. I don't know. Is it? You're full of questions tonight, Marcella. You are full of surprises, Smith. He takes my arm and leads me over to the table, setting both our glasses down before pulling out my chair. The food's getting cold. I say, taking my seat and letting him push in my chair. You have nice manners, Mr. Baldwin. Don't look at your napkin yet. Let me sit first, so I can enjoy it. He goes back for the casserole dish and places it on the table, then serves me a heaping spoonful. I really don't know what to make of this version of Smith Baldwin. Okay, he says, you can look now. I get a little nervous as I open up the napkin flap. In black marker, it says, "What will it take?" I look at him, back down at his message, then at him again. "What will what take?" I ask. "To make your dream come true." I sigh. I already told Brick. I don't know what my dream is. How could you not know what you want out of life? You're 30 years old. Surely you felt disappointment and wanted more. "Of course," I say, tasting his food. "Mmm, this is good, Smith. You should have dinner waiting for me every night when I get home from work."
"See, that's what I'm talking about. Is that what you want?"
It was a sexist joke, I laugh. Role reversal and all that good shit.
"But is it something you want?"
"A house husband? No, I can honestly say I've never wished for a house husband. The cleaning only turns me on if you never do it, then decide to do it to make me happy." I wink at him. But he's got a very serious look on his face. "What?
Do you see yourself with a family?"
I just stare at him. "What are you talking about?"
"I don't think my question was cryptic."
"Who would I want a family with?" I ask. He's about to answer, but I put up my hand. "No, wait. You asked, so I guess you're really interested. I'll answer you. The person I'm having a family with is the only thing that matters."
"So you'd like to fall in love?"
"Of course," I say, laughing. "Doesn't everyone?" He takes a sip of his champagne and then sets his glass down before answering.
"I think most people would, at least when they're young. I can imagine you get to an age where you don't care anymore, but I don't think 30 is that age."
He looks at me for a second.
"I don't think 36 is that age either."
"You're 36, I say.
"I know. I still want to find love."
"I can't picture you in love."
"Why not?"
"I don't know," I say. "This is a pretty intense conversation for Christmas Eve Eve, isn't it?"
"You wouldn't know, would you? You've never had a Christmas Eve Eve dinner before. Maybe this is what everyone does."
"Or maybe you're just being weird. Are we dating?"
"Are we?"
"Smith, stop it. If you've got something to say..."
"I do have something to say."
"Then say it." I'm kind of annoyed right now, and I'm actually feeling bad for being annoyed, because he planned a night of lady porn for me while I was at work.
"Why are you here, Chella?"
"I live here. Why are you here, Smith?"
"I like you."
I just blink at him.
"What will it take, Chella? What will it take to make you forget about Quinn and Brick and just take me for a spin?"
"So you want to date me? For real? And I should walk away from Quinn and Brick and the whole thing? The entire arrangement? Are you jealous?"
"No," he says. "And that's the honest truth. Quinn doesn't want you."
"Hey,
I don't mean it that way. He likes you, but he wants Rochelle. You're just a stand-in. And Brick, well, you're definitely not Brick's type."
"What is Brick's type?"
"Dirty whores, mostly."
I laugh, like, kinda loud. "I think I fit that description, actually."
"You do not. Brick likes desperate girls, ones who need that dream he's offering. You're not her. You don't need anything from us, and yet, here you are. Just tell me why you're here."
"I don't know what to say."
"Try the truth."
We stare at each other in silence.
"Why is it so hard for you?"
I take in a deep breath and let it out. "It's a very personal thing. I like you a lot. I would date you. And you're right about Brick and Quinn. We're not soulmates or anything. But I like them. And I'm with all three of you right now."
"So you want it to stay that way?"
"Not forever. Not even for much longer, probably. But for now. I want this to stay the same for right now."
"Why? Why did you go up to Rochelle's room that night? Why did you allow Quinn to sleep with you?"
I have nothing to say to that, so I stay silent.
"Rochelle came for money and a place to live. Quinn thinks she was homeless before she met us. She needed her dream fulfilled. But you don't."
"How do you know I don't? Maybe this is my dream. Did you ever ask yourself that?"
"Is it your dream?" Obviously, I'm interested in what you guys are offering. I think we can all agree on that just by looking at all the things I've agreed to in the recent weeks. But no, it's not my dream.
Then what will it take?
I put my fork down and sigh. Can you ask me this again next week?
You do know that they're both at the club right now picking out the girl they'll fuck tonight, right?
Why are you telling me this? To make me jealous? I'm not jealous. I don't care what they do when they're not with me. On Saturday night at midnight, Quinn will show up in my apartment and we'll have fun. Tuesday night at midnight, Brick will call me and say nice things.
And what will I do Thursday night at midnight?
Nothing, I say. You don't bother with me at midnight.
Because I can't touch you without Brick.
I'm not the one who gave you that rule.
But you're okay with it?
I don't think this is what people do on Christmas Eve Eve.
You'd be wrong. The holidays are the perfect time for family fights.
Family? I laugh. Come on, Smith. I've known you, what, a month, if that?
What will it take, Smith says, his voice rising, to change your mind and make you want to just be with me?
To change my mind about the arrangement? Nothing, Smith. Nothing you can say or do will change my mind about this arrangement.
So you want all four of us to be together?
Yes, I say, tired of talking about this. Yes, I do. I want it, and I'm going to ask for it when Quinn comes over Saturday night. He just stares at me. The seconds tick off, and then...
Okay, then what? Once you get that, then what? You'll stay?
I might. I don't know yet.
You're lying, Chella.
I huff out a breath of air, then grab my napkin off my lap and toss it on the table. I'm done, I say, getting up from my chair. Smith stands as well.
Just tell me what you're doing and I'll back off, but I don't like being manipulated.
I throw up my hands. How am I manipulating you?
I don't know, but you are. Quinn and Brick are happy to forget how we found you. They don't care about you, Chella. That's why they're okay with letting it go. But I actually like you, and I know you're lying to me about something, so what is it?
I want to tell him, I really do, because I like him back, a lot. But I can't tell him now, not yet, not when I'm so close to what I came for. I got you a Christmas present, I blurt, desperate to change the subject. I know it won't work, but I try it anyway. His frown eases a little, and then he smiles.
What did you get me?
I sigh out a long breath of relief, thankful. It's pretty special, but I can't give it to you yet. I have to save it a little longer. It's a present for later, Smith. Something more meaningful than I want to share with you now.
Because you're not done with Brick and Quinn? His words are angry at first. And you have to finish that before you can start something new?
But they are soft by the time he's done. I nod. Yes. That's exactly it. I have to finish what I started, and then I have a gift for you, so I hope you can wait a little longer. He walks around the table and stands in front of me. I can tell he wants to touch me, maybe very badly, but he stuffs his hands in his pockets, like he usually does when he needs to control his urges around me. The rules, it seems, are meaningful to him.
I can wait.
Good. I'm glad. I really am.
Did you get Brick and Quinn a gift?
Yes, I say, but it's not the same. His eyes go sad for a moment.
How are they different?
They just are. Can we please talk about this next week? He thinks about my request for a few moments, trying to read between the lines, I bet, and he must kind of get it, even though I know he has no clue what's really happening, because he says,
Sure, I can wait. And besides, I got you a present too, and I don't want to wait, so I'm gonna give it to you now.
He walks away, goes up the stairs to the second floor, and disappears inside his bedroom. I grab both our glasses of champagne and refill them to give myself something to do. When he comes back, he's all smiles, and he's got his hands behind his back. He motions to me with his head.
Over here, in front of the fireplace.
The fireplace is double-sided, and separates the living and dining rooms. He walks over to the polished marble hearth seat on the living room side and motions with his head again.
Sit here.
I have no idea what to expect right now, but I walk over and sit, placing our glasses of champagne on the seat next to me. He sits too, and then brings out a turquoise blue box with a white ribbon tied around it. I smile. Tiffany's?
Women go crazy for Tiffany boxes, right?
We do, I laugh, even girls like me.
Well, don't jump to conclusions, he says. It's more than it seems.
He hands it to me and I take it. It's not a ring box, it's bigger than that, about 8 inches square, and it's very light.
Open it, he says.
I pull on the white satin ribbon and let it fall into my lap, then lift the lid off the box. It's empty. I furrow my brows and look at him expectantly.
It's not empty, he says.
I look again, but yes, it is.
It's filled with everything, Chella, every possibility. You can put whatever you want in that box. It doesn't even need to fit inside. It will still count, whatever you want.
I look at him and have a small revelation, just like I did last night.
I'll get it for you. I asked what it would take to make you forget Brick and Quinn, and I mean it. Whatever it takes, I can put it in there for you. To some people, life is about survival. I've been there. Not by birth. I had to find that part of living by myself. And I'm betting you've been there too. I don't know how or when or why, since your family is obviously wealthy. But I have a feeling you've been in survival mode before. But life isn't really about survival. It's about living. It's about meeting people and going places, and feeling things you don't normally get a chance to meet, or see, or feel. It's about being aware of what you're doing and why. It's about opportunities and possibilities. It's about experiences, Chella. So my gift to you is whatever you want. Put whatever you want in that box and it's yours. Courtesy of me.
The dream? I ask, but he shakes his head.
No, it's not about the dream. It's about the want, the longing, Chella. You remember the longing?
The book? I ask, still slightly confused.
The message inside the book. Longing. A yearning desire. A burning ache in the heart. Something you hunger for. Thirst for. Something you want so bad it's killing you slowly not to have it. That's what goes in the box. And I realize the box is small, and these things feel big, but they have no boundaries. They are ethereal, like a mist or a spray, or that feeling you get in the pit of your stomach when you know you lost something and can't get it back. I will give you that, Chella. I will fill in the deep, dark hole you're so desperate to cover up with whatever it is you're doing here with us, and I will make your longing go away. That's my present.
Chapter 31. Brick. Quinn is pouting as he stares down into his whiskey glass as we wait for Smith and Chella to arrive at the club.
3 years, he says. This is the first Christmas without her in 3 years.
I roll my eyes because he's not looking at me, but I try to be patient.
I hope to God you do not start with this shit tonight, asshole. This is for Chella, understand? She's not interested in your stupid broken heart. So suck it up, be a man, and shut the fuck up. I can't take any more of your whining.
I'm not really known for my patience, but that was me trying, hard. Quinn looks up at me.
Don't be a dick.
I take a deep breath.
Focus, Quinn. On the here and now. Let her go. She's gone. Perhaps one day she'll come back, but the chances are low, so don't get your hopes up. And I'm sorry if this is harsh, but you're being a pussy.
You are a dick. You don't know what love feels like because that cold black heart of yours is two sizes too small.
You were watching The Grinch on Saturday morning cartoons again, weren't you?
Quinn smiles but tries to hide it.
Saturday morning cartoons don't even exist anymore, dumbass, and you are the Grinch.
I point to my outfit. Do I look like the motherfucking Grinch?
He laughs this time. Usually Smith plays Santa at the Christmas Eve party. That's his deal, right? I'm going to give away all my money. I'm going to be the goddamn fairy godmother to the world. but he's with Chella, and this is a surprise for her. So, yeah, I'm Santa. There are a shitload of kids here. I'm not into Christmas. I let the staff decorate the club 2 weeks prior, and it all comes down before New Year's Eve, because that's the holiday that counts as far as I'm concerned. New Year's Eve is a man's holiday, a party holiday. Not the kind with that sickly sweet eggnog. The kind with the eggnog that knocks you on your ass. The kind of party with foil hats and masks. We like masks here at the club, regardless, but we especially like holidays that advocate masks. And a ton of confetti and balloons coming down from the ceiling. New Year's Eve is the only time we allow club activities on the first floor. It's hot as fuck in here on New Year's Eve, and I'm not talking about the furnace. Naked women everywhere. Dirty sex going on all over the place. We close all the outside shutters on the building for this party. The only night of the year we do that. Everyone in by 10, no one leaves until after midnight. It's not a long party, but it's one every member comes to. 7 more days, Brick. 7 more days, and this bullshit is over for another year. Or at least until Valentine's Day, which I refuse to think about right now because I hate that holiday too. But the Christmas Eve party is for families. We don't even close the inside blinds on the windows for Christmas Eve parties. I can't take this screaming, I say. Fucking hate kids. How do you hate kids? Quinn asks, shaking his head. Like, for real, man, that's just wrong. Do you hear them down there, running around like sugared-up maniacs? You mean all that joy? He almost snorts at me. If you're going to be an asshole, I'll be Santa, for fuck's sake. I'm already wearing the fucking suit, I growl. There are a grand total of 65 club kids. 65. How? We only have 42 members. I don't understand how people can have more than one. And each kid gets a personalized present from Santa. Which means I have to sit on that stupid throne all night, handing out gifts. Thank God they tire quick and start throwing tantrums. The parents usually take them home around 9:30, and by 10, I've blocked the whole thing out with some single malt scotch. Ah, Quinn says. There they are. I lean over the banister and look down into the lobby to watch Chella's face as she comes through the revolving doors. I bet she thought Smith was bringing her here for a sex party tonight. I do smile at that. Chella's a nice girl. I like her a lot. She's smart and funny and totally normal. So not what I'm used to. Still, it's good to venture out of my comfort zone every once in a while. And she's pretty. She's very pretty. Okay, I say as I stand. I pull the white beard up into my face and straighten out my giant black belt. I feel ridiculous, but I'm taking one for the team to make Archella happy. Smith owes me. Quinn and I start down the stairs, and before we even hit the landing where the elevator is, the maniacs are screaming, "Santa! Santa!" "Suck it up, you pussy," Quinn whispers, laughing. "Be a man and shut the fuck up." "No more swearing, asshole. There are kids here." I start the whole thing out with some ho-ho-hos and go right to Marcella Walcott. Smith is smiling so big, it might make all my humiliation worth it. I take Chella's hand and bring it to my lips, kissing her a little more seductively than Santa should. But hey, I'm not going to apologize. Quinn hands me 3 presents in Tiffany blue boxes. "Hold out your hands, Marcella Walcott. I've heard you've been a very good girl this year." She giggles. Actually giggles, which should embarrass her since she's 30 years old. But instead, she shoots me a look that says she belongs on the naughty list. I place the 3 boxes in her outstretched hands and do my best not to push her up against the banister and fuck her because she looks stunning in that dress. Smith didn't choose a PG-13 outfit for her tonight. Chella is beyond happy. She's like a little girl on, well, Christmas. And for a moment, I feel sorry for her, that she missed out on the holidays for most of her life. Sure, I hate kids, and I'm an atheist, but if I had a kid, I'd definitely do the whole Christmas thing upright. I can't stay with them because the maniacs are back, tugging on my coat, pulling on my belt, trying to grab at my beard. I am herded over into the white room, where Santa's one-night workshop has been set up. At least I have some female elves to appreciate while I spend the next 3 hours dutifully lifting each kid into my lap and handing them a present with their name on it. I don't see Chella again until Santa's bags of goodies have been emptied and the tantrums are starting. It takes me 10 minutes to get past all the sticky fingers trying to touch my suit, and then... bliss. As I drop into a chair in Smith's bar and pull my beard down to drink. "You," Chella says, coming to sit in my lap. She kisses me on the cheek as she wraps her arm around my neck. "Are loved." "Ah," I smile. "Thank you," she says, looking at all three of us. I wonder if Smith is getting jealous that she's in my lap. Because I'm having some very dirty thoughts about her right about now. "I love this night so much, you have no idea." "Open your presents," Quinn says, pointing to the three packages on the table. "These two are from Brick and me, and this one is from Hotshot over there." He hooks a thumb in the direction of Smith, who is across the room, leaning against the bar. "You guys, I really don't need gifts," Chella protests. "Everybody needs gifts, Chella," Smith says. Her eyes linger on him for a moment, wondering if he's mad, probably. I'm wondering the same thing myself. His happiness at her joy seems to be wearing off, and the reality of what's going to happen tonight has set in. Chella takes the first small present. It's either mine or Quinn's. They are identical, so it doesn't matter. The bow is untied carefully, like she's savoring the moment, and then the lid comes off and she whispers, "That's beautiful." She takes the diamond cuff out and Quinn helps her fasten it around her wrist. It's tight, as it should be. "This is mine," Quinn says, kissing the underside of her wrist. Chella looks at the other identical box, then finds me. I smile. She already knows what we're doing here. She reaches for my package, unties the bow, less carefully this time, and then I help her fasten that cuff around her other wrist. I can be dramatic. So, like Quinn, I kiss the underside of her wrist and say, "This one's mine." Chella holds her wrists out in front of her and smiles like a child. "I love them, you guys. Adore them. Not because they're Tiffany and not because they're diamonds, but because they come from you." She gets up and kisses both of us on the cheek, and then sits back down and reaches for the last box. It's bigger, not by much, but she has to know it's not a bracelet. She's run out of wrists, at any rate. "Is this from you, Smith?" He nods from across the room, and I'm just about to snap at him, tell him to pull himself out of this funk he's in and get his ass over here, when he sets his drink down on the bar and walks over to stand behind Chella's chair. "Open it," he says. Chella does, even quicker than the second present, and gasps as she pulls the diamond choker out of its box. "Smith," she breathes, "this is stunning." Smith leans over her shoulder, takes it from her hands, unclasps the mechanism, and then fastens it around her throat until it really does look like she's choking on diamonds. It is stunning. And it cost almost as much as a house on Little Raven Street. "I get all of this," Smith says, leaning over her shoulder to whisper in her ear once the choker is in place. "You, every bit of you, is mine." Chella glances at me to see what I'll say about that. I say nothing, neither does Quinn. What we gave her are trinkets in comparison, and how we feel about her is comparable. She is a toy to us. The caller from Smith says she is no toy to him from this moment forward. She leans into Smith and kisses him on the lips. Smith allows it, since the four of us are together and he can break the no-touching rule. But he doesn't let it linger. He backs away and says, "Let me know when you're ready to go home. I'll drop you off." Quinn shoots me a look. We already talked about this yesterday. I want her here tonight because Smith owes me some time. I totally understand the whole father fiasco, and I totally get that he just claimed her, but that doesn't mean I don't want my night back. "I think I'm going to stay here tonight," Chella says. "I don't even have a tree at home. I'd just be depressed tomorrow morning when I woke up." "Sure," Smith says, doing his best not to look at me. "I'll walk you up." "Okay," Chella says. "I'm tired. I'm going to take a bath and go to bed." She kisses me once more, this time leaning into my ear to say, "Thank you. It was a special night." "It's not over yet," I whisper back as I lean into her neck. "I'll be up later." "Good," she says. "I have a present for you." And then she hops out of my lap and gives Quinn a kiss too, before letting Smith take her hand and lead her down to the elevator. "What was that?" Quinn asks. "I don't know," I say, taking a sip of my drink. "Do you think he's pissed off that you're taking your night back?" I shrug. "I'm not sure I should care. He's been living at her fucking house. I'm not done with her yet, and she's obviously not done with us. So, yeah, me either. I'm all for the quad this week, but I'm going to spend my last night alone with her. Alone with her, you know?" We let it go. I take off the Santa suit and hand it over to the bartender, then straighten my tie and put my suit coat on. Smith doesn't come back until 11:45, and when he takes a seat across from me at the table, he asks, "So you're going up tonight?" "It's my night," I say. "We agreed." "And you don't want me there?" "I'm not going to fuck her, I told you that." He stares at me for a moment. "Then I guess I'll go home." "It's not even your home, Smith. It's her home." "Apparently, this is her home now," he says. I watch him walk out, pissed off and probably hurt. But I don't care. The rules are the rules, and whether he likes it or not, we're still playing the game. It only works if we don't fall in love. He knew that going in. It only ends when she quits. And right now, she's still playing to win. The rules are the rules. At midnight, I get up, walk down the steps to the landing, and get in the elevator. When I get to her apartment door, I open it up. It's not even locked. Chella is standing in front of the window wearing, Jesus Christ, straps. That's the only way to describe what she's wearing, straps, across her thighs, across her belly, across her breasts. Except these straps cover absolutely nothing. She turns and leans against the window. I imagine how cold the glass feels against her bare skin. "I have a confession to make," she says. I raise my eyebrows at her. "I lied. I've been a very bad girl this year." I turn to close the door so I can smile, but when I turn back, the smile is gone. "What have I told you about lying to me, Marcella?" I've told her nothing, but I'm certain she can extrapolate the answer I'm looking for in this little fantasy. "You said I'd be punished next time." She bites her lip. "Will you punish me?" It almost sounds like begging, and yeah, I'd fucking love to punish the hell out of her right now, downstairs in the room I have set up for it. But that's not what I'm looking for, even if she is. I walk over to the couch and sit down. "Come here, Marcella." I like to use her full name when I'm being stern, and I will happily be stern with her. She feigns nervousness and then slowly walks over to me. She's wearing the most erotic fuck-me heels I've ever seen, strappy ones, like that thing she's calling an outfit. "Sit on my lap, sweetheart." I pat my thigh and she obediently takes her place. "Confess your sins to me, Chella, and then I'll decide what to do with you." She starts playing with her breasts. "I'm a slut," she says. "I'm addicted to sex. I love it so much, Brick. I can't stop myself." Two fingers slide down between her legs. The outfit has nothing in the way of panties. It's just more straps, digging into the flesh on each side of her puffy pussy. "I think about you all the time. I want your cock deep inside me. I want it in my mouth, down my throat. Holy shit. I wonder if she's like this with Quinn. Maybe I'm not giving her enough credit." "Stop it, Brick. She's playing a game with you, and Smith is falling in love with her. You do not start a new game while you're playing the old one." "I want you," she continues. "I want you to beat the bad out of me." I smile at her, grab her hair, and yank her head back. "I will, Chella. I will." And then I come to my senses. "But," I say, smiling at her as I let her hair go. I bring her close to me and give her a hug. "But look, Chella, I'm kind of dangerous in that respect. I don't think it would work for us. She clicks her tongue. Brick, who turns down dirty, submissive sex? This was my present to you, and you're ruining it. I laugh and hug her, my hand rubbing the curve of her ass cheek. I can give you a taste if you like. I can do that much. But take my word on this, sweetie. You're not ready for the kind of dominance I display. But I can still be fun, and I can still make it hurt. I've been bad, Mr. Brickman, she says again in her sultry voice, looking up at me with her smoky eyes. Very, very bad. We both laugh this time. I bet you have, you little whore. Lie face down with your head in my lap. She does it without question, and damn, I'm sorry I didn't realize earlier she might be into this. I'd have taken her downstairs and taught her how to submit to me properly instead of allowing her to become Rochelle's replacement. But it's done now, and there's no way to go back. She will be Smith's, eventually. But tonight, she's mine. I spank her, hard. The sound of my hand on her ass cheeks fills the room. I spank her until she comes all over my fingers.
Chapter 32, Quinn. Christmas night at exactly midnight, I make my way up to Chella's apartment. I've been dying to see her all day. All three of us have. We've been downstairs the whole time waiting to see if she'd come down. For breakfast, then lunch, then dinner. But she didn't. She stayed inside and kept to herself. I wonder if the holidays are hard for her, if she thinks about her childhood. I don't know much about what happened, but I don't need to know much. What happened with her father the other night is explanation enough. She was neglected, somehow, some way. The door is unlocked when I try the knob, and when I enter, there's Christmas music playing and the remnants of wrapping paper and boxes all over the living room floor. We give her the real presents on Christmas Eve, but Brick came back up here early this morning while she was still sleeping and stacked dozens of presents under her tree. We got her toys. A dollhouse, Barbies, sparkling, glittery craft kits, a stereo. People don't get those anymore, but it was something you asked for at Christmas as a teenager back in the day. We got her a diary and some Lego sets. All the things she missed out on growing up. Chella? I call into the apartment. She's nowhere to be seen.
Back here.
A faint yell from the bedroom. I walk down the hallway and enter the bedroom, find it empty. Chella, where are you?
Up here, she calls again, this time louder. In the closet.
In the closet? I walk over to the closet, hers, not ours, and peek inside. What the fuck? Chella's head pops out from the attic door in the ceiling.
Hey, come up here.
What are you doing? I ask. Where the hell did this ladder come from?
It's an attic, Quinn, and it's my present to you.
She smiles, her head hanging upside down, her dark hair falling over her shoulders.
Come on. I'm dying to show you this. I've been keeping it a secret for a week, and I can't take it anymore.
I climb up the steep attic ladder and peek inside as she scoots away and backs up against a small circular window at the far end of the room, her head outlined by the lights around the gold dome of the Capitol building. What the fuck is all this?
What does it look like? Chella asks. Or who does it look like?
I take it all in. A small, shabby Christmas tree is lit up on the opposite end as Chella. It's decorated with white lights and ornaments made of old paper. There's dozens of vintage suitcases stacked around the perimeter walls, those little hand cases women used to carry makeup and toiletries in back in the 50s and 60s. And there's a fuzzy pink rug on the floor. It looks like Rochelle, I say, sadness filling my heart.
It is Rochelle, Chella says. I found this place by accident last week, and even I saw it immediately. She came up here, I guess. Her little secret room, her little private life. And I don't think Brick knows about it.
No, I say, crawling across the rug and sitting cross-legged in front of Chella. He'd have thrown it all away if he did.
Yeah, that's why I didn't tell him. I figure all this stuff belongs to you. And look,
she says, crawling over to an old record player, the kind that comes in a case.
There's music, too.
She flips a switch, and the turntable begins to spin. When she lifts the arm and places the needle on the 45 record, it starts to play Blue Christmas.
Fuck,
I say. Chella frowns.
Is this making you sad? I didn't want to make you sad.
No, I say, laying back on the rug and closing my eyes, two fingers massaging my temple to drive away the headache I feel coming. I'm not sad. I'm devastated. I just don't want it to show. I miss her so fucking much. Chella crawls over to me and lies down. She wraps an arm around my waist and places her head against my chest.
I'm sorry she left. And I wish I knew where she went, because I'd tell you, Quinn, I promise I would.
I slip an arm under her and start playing with her hair as I imagine all the nights Rochelle and I spent together listening to these old records. Blue Christmas. That's pretty much how I feel right now.
Open your eyes and look up,
Chella says. I do, and on the ceiling is a work of art. Jesus, I whisper. What is all that?
Her,
Chella says.
She has a thing for dandelions.
I get a stabbing pain in my heart. I used to pick her dandelions every summer. Whole bouquets of them. When they were yellow, she'd put them in a vase. And there on the ceiling is the vase filled with our weedy flowers. And then in late summer, I'd pick her wishes. I smile at that thought. Millions of wishes. Chella points to the ceiling.
Like that?
It's a self-portrait of Rochelle. She's not a painter, at least not as far as I knew, but it resembles her enough for me to recognize her. She's blowing the wishes away.
What was her wish, Quinn? Did she ever tell you?
Her wish, I say, thinking about it. It has been so long since we thought of our relationship in terms of the arrangement. Her wish was to belong to someone. We sigh together.
I think that might be my wish too,
Chella says. Really? I ask, turning my head so I can see her in profile.
Yeah. Brick and Smith have both asked me, but I don't feel like telling them.
But you'll tell me? She nods slowly.
I like telling you things. You tell me things, I tell you things. You're the perfect number two, Quinn. Easy to love, just like Smith said. And easy to laugh with, too.
I like you too, Chella. And if I had my way, we'd stay in this arrangement forever.
But we won't, will we?
No, I say. It never lasts. More sighing from both of us. What's all that writing? I ask, pointing to the ceiling.
It's a song,
Chella says.
An old church song, I'll Fly Away. Have you ever heard it?
I shake my head. Sick. So sick for not knowing this about the girl I loved.
I can play it,
Chella says.
She has the record.
When I say nothing, Chella gets up on her knees and crawls over to the record player. Anything is better than Blue Christmas. She takes that record off, plops a new record on, and then starts the music with a loud, crackling noise. Then she crawls back to me and lies down, points to the ceiling.
The words are up there. She wrote them all out.
I follow along with the song, reading her words, dying inside. She's dead, isn't she? I ask.
No.
Chella says softly, leaning into me to kiss my cheek.
I don't think so.
That song is about dying, Chella. Whatever this is, whatever reason she had for doing all this, she did it as a goodbye. Chella lets out a long exhale.
She left, so that is a goodbye, but I don't think she left to kill herself, Quinn.
The song is about death, I say, too loud.
I didn't know her well, Quinn. Not at all, hardly, but if there's one thing I understood about Rochelle, it's that she's not a literal person. She's an artist, a musician, maybe a painter and a poet, but she didn't write out those lyrics on the ceiling as a premonition of her suicide. She wrote them as a memorial to your love.
So, our love is dead. That doesn't help.
Maybe it's just a new beginning?
Chella asks.
Maybe she just wanted out of this arrangement. Did that ever occur to you?
Then why not tell me? I ask, turning my head to look at Chella. Why just pick up and leave? She knew the rules.
Maybe I don't know all the rules of taking turns, Quinn, but it's my understanding that once you walk out, there's no turning back.
I don't answer.
So maybe she left to end the game and give the two of you a chance to start over. I'm supposed to look for her?
I want to throw up.
And I didn't?
She's been gone for a month. She could be anywhere.
She probably thinks it's going to take a while for you to sort it all out, Quinn. So don't jump to conclusions.
The song ends and the needle plays endless static as it jumps the open space at the center of the record. I think this is over now, I say.
Yeah,
Chella says in a low, sad whisper.
I think so too.
We lie there in the static of nothingness for a little longer, and then Chella gets up and crawls over to the record player again, picking up the needle and turning it off.
Come on,
she says, tugging on my hand.
Let's go to sleep.
She climbs down from the attic and I follow a few seconds later. She's changing out of her dress and into a t-shirt and shorts. I walk across the hall into the closet I share with Brick and Smith and slowly undress until I'm only wearing gray boxer briefs. Chella is waiting for me in bed, holding the covers open so I can climb in. I flip off the light and then pull her close.
Merry Christmas,
she says, holding on to me tight. Merry Christmas, Chella, I say, hugging her back. We sleep like that, clutching each other like we don't want to let go. But we both know it's time to let go.
Chapter 33, Smith. So, tonight? I'm trying my best to be cool with this, but I'm not cool with this. That's what she told Quinn. Chella made herself very clear the other night. She wants to experience the four of us together. The quad, as we like to call it. And I'll admit, this was my aim as well when we first started the game. But I'm not sure anymore. I know what you're thinking, Brick says. And I don't think it's fair. No, I say, you wouldn't, because you want this. You want it, too. I did. Now, not so much. Brick throws up his hands. We're sitting in my bar at the club. Quinn and Chella are out, doing something fun today. So back out, Smith. Call the game. End it. We won't care if you do. I know he won't. Quinn, maybe. But Brick's not a grudge holder. He's not invested in very much, if you ask me. But who asked me? We'll get over it. Find a new girl. I don't want a new girl, Brick. I'm out. He doesn't bother throwing up his hands. He doesn't even shrug. So do it. Leave. But she wants it, Smith. And that's the only thing that matters at this point. She wants it, so you better think about that. If you call the game, she might be mad at you. Then maybe that's how it has to be. Maybe you're just being juvenile. Maybe I'm just in love. Maybe she's not in love with you back. Burn. She is, I say, but I'm not really as sure as I sound. How many ways can I explain this to you, Smith? Let's use Rochelle as an example. She left. Why? She was done? With Quinn? He asks. I don't think so. She left to end the game and start over. Quinn told me Chella found some secret room up in the attic of her apartment. Rochelle's secret room. There's a lot of stuff up there about starting over. Rochelle had to leave the game in order to do that. It doesn't mean she never cared about me or you, and it doesn't mean she's not in love with Quinn. It means the game is over. That's it. I'm almost positive she's coming back. Not to us, but to Quinn. She just needs to sort things out first. Chella isn't Rochelle. Not even close. She's not weird, for one, and she's not desperate for anything. How do you know? I'm irritated. What do you mean, how do I know? Chella is fucking wealthy. Probably has more money in her trust fund than you make in 10 years. She's loaded. And you, of all people, understand that money isn't happiness. So what is she desperate for? I ask. I'm interested, Brick. I am. So if you know something... I don't know anything except she's here, Smith. With all three of us. Perfectly willing to go along with the rules and play the game. And she wants to finish it. I'm betting you money this is over in a week, so why not let her get what she came for and then you can both skip out and start over? I'm silent as I think this through. What if we can't start over? I ask him. What if, after we finish the game, I can't let it go? Then you're a dumbass. I sigh. You're a dumbass because she's not in love with me, Smith. She's not in love with Quinn. If she's interested in any of us, it's you. And while I'm in the mood to let it all out, I'll just say it would be completely 100% selfish of you to deny her the end she's looking for. She's here. She needs it to end the way she envisioned it in her mind. If she doesn't get that, who's to say she won't go looking somewhere else? I can't even picture that in my head. Not because I can't picture Chella doing it, but because I would kill someone. If this is what she wants, Brick continues. His tone is softer now. More understanding. Isn't it better to let her do it with us than complete strangers? I let out a frustrated breath of air. She's got problems, we all know that, and she's working them out, using us and the game to do it. Don't take it personally, Smith. It's not about you right now. It's about her. Let her do it her own way in her own time. I'm jealous, I admit. I'm fucking jealous. Of me? He laughs. Of Quinn? Why? I don't want you to touch her. He turns his head away, done with me. Do what you want, but you're being short-sighted. She already belongs to you, and if you need Quinn and me to defer to you tonight, we will. He looks back at me, stares hard at me. You'd let me run things? Somehow I can't picture that. I don't care, Smith. That's the part you refuse to see. I do not care. I just want a good, dirty fuck with you and Quinn and Chella. I'm pretty sure that's all Quinn wants, too. Just a nice, filthy fuck to end the game. So plan it however you want. As long as we're all satisfied at the end, I'm okay with it. He stands up, buttons his suit coat, and then points down to the lobby. I'm having lunch with Lucinda and her husband today. I lean over the balcony railing to look down. Lucinda and her husband are talking to a crowd of people just inside the White Room. Why? I don't know. They want to talk. Quinn's bringing Chella upstairs to my place at 8. See you then. He walks off. I watch him as he descends the stairs and then shakes the husband's hand. Funny how I don't even know that guy's name, and they've been members here for more than 8 years. Brick gives Lucinda a quick kiss on her cheek, and then they walk into the restaurant and disappear from my view. Give Chella what she needs. What does she need? It's fucking killing me because I know Brick's right about Chella. She is here for a reason, and she has refused to tell me what it is. Any of us. I have relentlessly questioned Quinn about it for over a week now. He says he has no idea, and like Brick, he doesn't care. How can I love a girl who wants to fuck my two best friends at the same time? I laugh out loud at that. Really, I am the biggest hypocrite ever. There have been other girls who thought they loved me. Thought being the important word in that sentence. I never loved them, so it couldn't be love. Love is not one-sided. Love has to come from both ends at the same time. Romantic love, at least. It's not the same as loving a child who's disconnected, or a parent who fucked you over. I don't think I ever loved my parents, but maybe they loved me. I guess it's possible, though doubtful. That makes me wonder about Chella's father. She was a little upset about the way he went about severing their ties, but not the way a child should be. Maybe she doesn't love him. How did her family get so screwed up? I have to wonder because he's been in public life for 20 years and not once was there a scandal about his family life. No secret mistress, no cheating wife. Chella has no criminal record. She didn't lash out or rebel as a teenager. Of course, her past has been scrubbed, so what do I know about her? What do I really know about her? I know she's dirty. Which makes me smile. Brick's right. We play this little game for the payout. The asymmetrical quad fucking is the prize. And I like it. I do. If I didn't, I wouldn't have invested so much time and energy in these girls over the years. She's very sexual, although I haven't really had the chance to see all of that side to her. Brick has seen her more sexual than I have. Quinn has seen a lot more than either of us. I just want something of my own, for once. And even thinking that makes me feel a little selfish. I have been given so much in this life. I do not deserve more. I really don't. I shouldn't even want Chella for myself. It breaks all my rules. But I do want her for myself. I wasn't lying to her father last week. I want to own her, keep her. Not like a house, though. I try and work this out in my mind, but it's difficult to come to terms with, to justify. It should make me feel good to give them the night we've been working towards. It just doesn't. I'm so fucking afraid that we'll get to the end of the game and I won't want her anymore. What would I do then? I can't even picture myself in another game at this point. I don't know what I'll do, but this, I look around the club. This place has been my life for a decade. It's my home. Well, it was my home until I moved in with Chella. I have spent almost all of my adult life getting by on the generosity of others. And I'm lucky because Brick and Quinn are very generous with me. They give me whatever I want. So much I am never thinking about not having enough. I never wonder anymore if people will provide me with the things I need. It just comes. Don't I owe Quinn and Brick the same consideration? Don't I owe them that much, at least? And shouldn't I think this through a little more before I give up everything I've worked towards all these years? Take Rochelle, for example. I never liked her much. I put up with her. I fucked her plenty of times with Brick and Quinn, but never alone. I didn't like her alone. And I knew that pretty quick once we all got together. What if my feelings for Chella change after tonight? Yes, it's better to know that up front, I decide. So I down my drink, throw down some bills as a tip for the bartender, and go home to think about this alone. Plan it out, I guess. What I'll do to her. What I'll make her do. And if this love isn't real, I'll know. I'll deal with tomorrow. Tomorrow. That's what I always do, right? There's always tomorrow.
Chapter 34, Quinn. Do you know where we're going tonight? I ask Chella. We're up in her apartment and she's walking towards me with her new jewelry, holding out the cuffs for me to help her put them on. I take one and wrap the thick band of diamonds around her wrist.
Tell me, she coos. She's very excited.
I'm very excited too, but I'm a little bit worried about her enthusiasm. She should be more apprehensive than excited. No, I'm asking you, I say, to guess. She thinks for a moment as I finish up with the first cuff and she hands me the other one.
Brick's apartment?
No, I say, handling the second cuff and taking the collar. It's heavy with diamonds and platinum. Smith is definitely not afraid to throw his money around when he feels like it's necessary. I'll give him that. Lift your hair up and turn around. And she does, and then she says,
down to the basement?
But she knows that's not happening. Absolutely not, I laugh, fastening the collar tight around her throat.
Then where?
I lean into her neck and kiss her softly, making her body shudder and tremble.
Smith's apartment, I whisper. Has he ever taken you up there?
She melts into my chest, her body soft and pliable.
God, this is going to be the best quad we've had.
I don't think we've ever had a girl we liked so much before. I know how this ends, but I like her. So I'm going to enjoy every second of tonight.
No,
she says. He's in charge tonight, Chella. I'm going to tell you the rules.
Rules?
She spins around to face me.
What rules? When we're all together, there are no rules.
Well, I smile at her. That's mostly true, but see, maybe you haven't noticed, but we like to spring new things on you at the last minute. To keep it all interesting. She scowls at me, pouts, really, hands on hips, her lower lip slightly protruding.
What are they?
Number one, I say, Smith is in charge. If he tells you to do something, you do it.
No questions?
Chella asks, raising one eyebrow. None.
Good, I'm into that.
I let myself chuckle because I know it's true. She is into this. So much more than any other girl we've ever had before. Number two, I continue. He can tell you not to do something.
Quinn,
she says, frowning for real this time.
Please tell me he's not going to stop me from having all of you.
God, you're such a little slut. She laughs.
I've been telling you that for weeks. He won't do that, will he?
I shake my head. I don't think so. He and Brick came to an understanding.
What kind of understanding?
Smith's in charge. Usually Brick is in charge, but also that I hesitate. Brick called me a few hours ago and we talked about Smith's concerns, how he handled it. I wasn't told not to say anything to Chella, but perhaps Brick just assumed. She's right. She deserves to know what's going on. Not all of it is mine to tell, so I'm not going to give her everything. But a little more won't hurt. Brick said you needed it, and Smith needed to give in to what you needed. She frowns again.
What's that mean?
I think, Chella, you're the only one who really knows. But I'm answering your question. Whether or not Smith will deny you what you want, and my answer is no. I don't know how he'll handle it, but he will handle it.
Do you think he'll blindfold me?
No, I laugh. Why would he do that?
They did last week when we were together. To keep me anxious, I think.
No blindfolds, I tell her, swiping a piece of hair away from her eyes. We want you to see everything tonight. She draws in a deep breath and finally, there are the nerves that should have put in an appearance as soon as I walked into her apartment. Are you ready? I ask, taking her hand. She nods her head and says,
I'm ready.
Then let's go.
Chapter 35. Brick. The first thing I notice when Quinn leads Chella through the door of Smith's third floor apartment is the dress. White, like a bride. Floor length, with intricate beading on the skirt and a plunging neckline that almost meets the high slit that comes all the way up the middle of her legs, barely covering her pussy. It's a dress that no bride would ever wear on her wedding day. But this isn't her wedding day. If I was going to continue the analogy, it would definitely be more like the wedding night, if you were marrying three men at the same time. The dress was Smith's choice, and it makes me wonder about his state of mind these days. Chella's throat is collared with diamonds, her wrists cuffed. We own her tonight. That's what the jewelry means. Again, Smith's idea. He wasn't satisfied with what Quinn and I had planned for her Christmas presents, so we gave in. We've been giving in to him a lot lately. I glance at Smith, leaning against the bar, holding a drink, and find him transfixed. No one else is in the room right now, just him and her. They look at each other like they are starving. We're wearing tuxedos, and Smith's is brand new, something a little edgier than he normally wears to the club, something he might have had specially made for his special day. I clear my throat and say, "Chella, you look so beautiful." Smith sets his drink down on the bar and walks towards her, reaching with his outstretched hands. He takes her into his arms and Quinn backs off, shooting me a look. Nervous, I realize. I think we're all nervous tonight, and it's not normal. Usually I'm in control of the first quad night, and when I take control, I mean business. There is no room for nerves when I'm in charge. I don't give anyone time to think, I just give orders. Smith leans in to kiss Chella on the cheek, whispers something to her I can't hear. I'd never tolerate that either. The purpose of the quad is to be a fucking quad. But I gave him my word, so I wait, patient, as they have a private moment. Smith backs away, still holding on to both of her hands, and then shifts until he's got one arm around her. He leads her forward. Quinn follows until the four of us are standing in the center of the large, elegant room, looking at each other. So close, we form a tight circle. "Hi, Brick," Chella says, shy. I don't think I've seen her shy, and I take a moment to wonder where it's coming from. "Smith?" "Chella," Smith says, taking her hand and placing it over my cock. "Do you want Brick to fuck you tonight?" "No," I decide. Her shyness isn't because of Smith. Smith is playing, that's evident. Chella swallows, looks at me, then immediately back at Smith. "Yes." Smith places a hand on her hair and pets her. "And Quinn?" he asks, taking her other hand and placing it on his cock. Chella doesn't look at Quinn. She only sees Smith. She stares straight into his eyes. He gazes back, their stare intense in its meaning. "Yes," she tells him. Smith looks at me and says, "She's yours. Give her what she wants, Brick." Chella is still staring at Smith.